Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson, an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So hey everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question why song. Something you never seen before. So gather around, squeeze it tight, 'cause you're bound to hear a little truth tonight. 'Cause the love around here is bound to make it fun. Head over heels for heaven above.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching from the book of Romans and will be continuing today with part two of The Depravity of Man. So let's turn in our Bibles to Romans chapter 3, verse 10, as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
Question number one, what does total depravity mean? Well, first of all, we need to understand what it doesn't mean. Total depravity does not mean human beings are depraved or as depraved as they could be. Nor does it mean that they cannot do any social or domestic good, for most humans are capable of much horizontal good. Horizontal referring to our relationships with one another. Capable of much horizontal good as a result of God's common grace to all people. So some people have misunderstood, misinterpreted this term, total depravity. Some have thought that what we're saying is that nobody can do anything good at all. Nothing that anybody does, even if it appears to be good, it's not actually good. That is an incorrect perspective. Neither does it mean that one is depraved to the extent that he or she cannot respond to God's offer to salvation. Now, some see total depravity resulting in a total inability on the part of the sinner to even respond to God's offer of salvation. Now, depravity means that there is not a single human being on the face of the earth that is right with God. Nobody is right with God naturally. So because man is depraved, he doesn't think properly or accurately about God. That, of course, is why we need the written revelation of God. Man left to himself would never draw the right conclusions about God. And whenever people reject the Bible or the further they move away from the biblical revelation, the further they get from reality when it concerns who God is. As the prophecy in Isaiah said, all we like sheep have gone astray. Everyone is moving in the wrong direction. And then he said there as well, finally, the way of peace they have not known. Total depravity results in no peace within the heart of man. This is why, no matter how rich a person is, no matter how successful they are, no matter how famous they might be, or whatever the case is, this is why people are still restless. This is why they're unsettled. This is why they're discontent. It's because of depravity. There's no peace within the heart of a man because of this depraved condition. So easy for people to think, you know, I'm okay. I'm not that bad. I'm really, you know, I'm a pretty good person, actually. Oh, if we only knew what did reside there in our hearts. Well, we do know because Jesus told us, what comes out of a man, that defiles a man, Jesus said. For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lewdness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. Listen, all these evil things come from within and defile a man. Jesus said, this is what is in the heart of man. Now, this is what I want to really impress upon you. This is what we need to understand. We need to understand how radically relevant this doctrine is to where we are at today. And I want you to see this, and I think you will see it clearly, that what we think is going on in our culture is not exactly what it is. And this is what I mean. We often hear today about cultural wars, don't we? But this is the reality. The cultural wars are a modern and postmodern conflict with the doctrine of depravity. When you strip away all of the exterior stuff and you really get down to what's going on in our culture, it really boils down to man's long war against God, man's refusal to believe God's evaluation of him, his estimation of him. That's what is happening in our society today. The doctrine of total depravity is the dividing line between liberal and conservative anthropology and sociology. If the first and most hated doctrine is the exclusivity of Christ in salvation, the second most hated doctrine is the doctrine of human depravity. Now, the doctrine of total depravity is also the dividing line between biblical Christianity and the rest of the world's religions. And note that I said biblical Christianity. Every other religion teaches that man is essentially good. This is where the biblical revelation and everything else, this is where there's this radical gulf that separates the two. Every other religion teaches that man is essentially good, not that he always behaves as he should, but in his heart of hearts, he is good and needs to work on bringing that good to the surface. Biblical Christianity, the biblical revelation, of course, says the opposite. It says all men are sinners, incapable of saving themselves, and must be saved by Christ. So, when you understand this, you begin to see why the liberals hate Christ and are happy to accommodate all other religions, even one as blatantly oppressive and violent as Islam. It is insane what's going on in our culture today. They want to do away with the Constitution because the Constitution was developed by men who believed that men are depraved, not essentially good. And we've got to get rid of that idea so anybody and everybody can just do anything they want and nobody can say anything about it and nobody can criticize it and nobody can say anything's wrong, any lifestyle's wrong. I mean, this is the insanity that we've come to. And it's interesting because when you think about this, what these guys have done, this political correct mentality and all this, this is a religion. This is an alternative morality. This is an alternative system of ethics. This is a humanistic, get God out of here. We're going to tell you what's right and wrong, and we're going to institute this thing, and we're going to enforce it. And if you don't like it, we'll penalize you, chastise you, we'll put you in prison, and maybe we'll kill you someday. This is where every utopian ideology ultimately leads. For the good of the larger, you know, group, for the welfare of the state, we can get rid of a few people that are causing trouble and not cooperating and not letting us reach our full potential. That's what's always happened. And it's happening here. But My point is simply this. This is not a political battle primarily. It's not a cultural war primarily. It is the long war against God. It is man standing up saying, we are righteous, we are good. You don't tell us we're bad. You don't tell us we're evil. We hate that. We'll never believe that. Man is essentially good. There's an interesting, obscure passage in Proverbs that talks about a generation who has not been washed from their filthiness, but they are righteous in their own eyes, and that's the generation that we're living in. They've not been washed from their filthiness, but they are righteous in their own eyes. They're self-righteous. We're living in crazy, crazy times. What does the doctrine of total depravity tell us? It tells us the Bible is true. How does it tell us the Bible is true? Because men really are the way the Bible describes them to be. This is a picture of reality. This is the way people really are. You know, all this talk about altruism and, you know, we've got to in poverty and all of this stuff. You know what I say? Hey, and as the president suggested, he said he doesn't see why anybody should have to live on an income of more than $200,000 a year. Great. I agree with that. I do just fine on an income far less than $200,000 a year. So I agree. Let's take everybody in Hollywood, reduce their annual salary to $200,000 a year, and let them give all of that money to poverty and to the eradication of all of these problems that they're always so concerned with. I'm not saying there aren't problems, but if they want a real solution, okay. You have the ability to do something about it. Why don't you do something about it? Because people are hypocrites, aren't they? Because they say one thing, but they don't do it. They tell people how they ought to live, but they themselves don't live that way. So again, point being, the Bible is true. Men really are the way the Bible describes them. And even if they can pull off being good in regard to their behavior, this is what we know is true of everybody. Their mouths are full of cursing and bitterness. Isn't it true? Is there any person in the world that's never cursed somebody else? Is there any person in the world that hasn't spewed out hatred and animosity at somebody for some reason or another? Maybe because they cut in front of you on the freeway or something, you know, and you wanted to see them crash and burn? This is human depravity. And it's there in the heart of everyone. But not everybody lets it come out. Not everybody is incapable of restraining themselves. There's still a lot of people, obviously, that do restrain themselves from doing physical harm to people. Sometimes it's out of fear of retribution or whatever. But the point is, it's in their hearts. The biblical picture of man is an accurate picture. It's an accurate picture of society today. It's an accurate picture of human history. So, the doctrine of total depravity tells us the Bible is true. Secondly, it tells us God's judgment is just. It would be an absolute injustice to allow such wickedness to go unpunished. Now, of course, again, the liberal-minded person has a very difficult time with the idea of punishment. But, you know, when you're dealing with a person like that or arguing, debating with them or whatever, you know, it's always good, I think, just for argument's sake, to bring up extreme cases. Bring up your Hitlers or your Maos or your Stalins or, you know, whoever else you want to use as a historical example. It's good to bring them up because if there is no judgment, then are you telling me that these guys just, that was it? They came onto the scene, they murdered and ravaged and raped and pillaged millions of people, and that's it. They're gone, and it's over, and that's the end of it, and no retribution. That, even a liberal will get a little bit shaken by that idea. So they'll come around to maybe there is something, you know, out there for that kind of a person. But here's the thing. Where do you stop? Because there's lots of people that are like that. They haven't terrorized a whole nation, but they've terrorized their family. They haven't terrorized a whole nation, but they've terrorized their community. They haven't terrorized a whole nation, but they've terrorized their wife. Just as cruel and vicious and wicked and vile. And so you see, if you stop and think about it and get away from all of the sappy, weird, sentimental ideas that somehow, you know, this monstrous, murderous beast of a person isn't really to blame for what they've done, that goes back to the refusal to believe in human depravity and the insistence that human beings are essentially good. How do you describe a serial killer, a rapist, a guy who murders and rapes, you know, 25, 30 women? Where's the good in that? No, there's nothing good in that. It's wicked. And there is a judgment. And there has to be a judgment. If there is any such thing as justice, God cannot allow the wicked to go unpunished. The third thing that the doctrine of total depravity tells us is that God's grace is the most amazing thing in the universe. That's what it tells us more than anything else. Because we are all part of the depraved club. I'm not up here saying everybody else is depraved, and I'm not. I'm right there, and you're right there. This is where we're all at. This is where we are by nature. This is our true natural condition. And it's to this depraved world that God, because of his love, sent his son. Now, you know, it's not hard to imagine the story going completely differently. And again, you know, let's think about some real wickedness for a moment here. Not just somebody irritated you or somebody, you know, said some little thing to you that wasn't nice or whatever, but, you know, think hard about the real wicked stuff that goes on in our world. The brutality, you know, real evil and wickedness and, you know, the things that people have done to other people and that. And then think about the person who just ignores you, shuns you, is rude to you, never responds to any of your gestures of kindness or grace or anything like that. You know, and he was talking about how, of course, men have done that with God forever. And, you know, his point was, you know, if I were God and that had been the case with the person, when it came down to, you know, dealing with them, it would be, hey, I remember that attitude. I remember how you shunned me. And so it's retribution time. It's judgment time. And that is the natural response to that kind of thing, isn't it? You know, when you go out of your way to be nice to somebody and they're rude to you, do you like that? Does that feel good? No, that doesn't feel good, does it? And if somebody consistently does that, if somebody's mean and cruel and all of that, I mean, you know, what does that do inside of you? It, you know, it makes you want to hurt them. It makes you want to avenge yourself on them or whatever. So if you think of it in those terms, it would be very easy to see that the story was completely different. That God, looking at this depraved, perverse, vile, corrupt, wicked world, not only all of those things, but then a world that's got its fist in God's face saying, you're not God, you're nothing. We don't even acknowledge your existence. You could easily see where God would just say, okay, you know what? I've had enough of this. And I am going to just nuke this whole universe. I could see that, understand that, and agree with that. But here's the amazing thing. God did not do that. He didn't do that. God's grace is the most amazing thing in the universe. Instead of coming down and judging the world, he came down and he died to save the world. And think of how Jesus was treated. Think of how he was hated and mocked and opposed and then so cruelly dealt with. But yet we see all the way through, Father, forgive them, right to the very point of being crucified. Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they do. This is where we see God's grace is the most amazing thing in the universe. Human depravity shows us, it magnifies the grace of God. And you think of the words to that song, Amazing Love. How can it be that thou, my God, would die for me? It's amazing love. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound. How many times have we sung that song that saved a wretch like me? In that time, in that day, that was a strong, strong word for wicked, vile, corrupt, a wretch like me. So you see, man's insistence on denying the truth of his own natural condition, it only puts him deeper in trouble. Why not just confess that it is a reality? I am corrupt. I am not good. But this is a very difficult thing for people to do, isn't it? It's a very hard thing to say you're sorry. It's a very hard thing to say you're wrong. It's a very hard thing to say that you are at fault. It's a very hard thing for a man to say, I am a sinner. But unless you say it and mean it, you'll never be delivered from it. But the moment you say it and mean it and cry out for God's mercy, there he is to lavish that mercy, to bestow it, to pour it out upon our lives. But as long as we insist that we're good, or you know, we might even go so far as to say, well, you know, I've got some problems and I recognize some areas here and I've made some mistakes and I've got some weaknesses. Forget all of that stuff. Those are just different forms of excuses. We got to come right down to the place of admitting what God says about us to be the truth. You know when it says in 1 John, if we will confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. You know the word confess actually means to say the same thing about. When I confess my sin, you know what I'm doing? I'm saying, God, I agree with your assessment of my behavior. I agree with it. I'm agreeing with you. What you said is right. I have sinned. God does not tell us we're depraved because he wants to beat us down. He doesn't tell us that because he's cruel and he wants us to feel bad about ourselves. It's not why he tells us that. He tells us because it's true. And you can never progress beyond your condition if you don't face the truth. If you go to a doctor and you have a serious disease, but you insist that the doctor not really tell you what the issue is, but let's just talk about these symptoms, you're never going to be healed. You might even die. You've got to get down to what the real issue is. And you thank God, you don't curse the doctor who tells you, well, this is what you've got. Because in diagnosing you, then he's able to apply a remedy and bring a healing. So God's just telling us this is the problem. But there is a remedy. There is a solution. It's the blood of Jesus Christ, God's Son, that cleanses a depraved man or woman from all sin. And that, again, is the gospel. And that's what Paul was proud of. That's what he was anxious to preach. And that is what he is going to go on and to begin to elaborate on as we move further into Romans, as we pick up next time in verse 21.
We'll return with more insightful lessons from the book of Romans in our next study as Pastor Brian continues with part one of the demonstration of God's resurrection. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of this study, or perhaps you'd like to review it again at a more convenient time, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled The Depravity of Man. Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number B0112. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. Pastor Brian would also love to connect with you online, and he can be found at facebook.com/Pastor Brian Broderson, also on Twitter at twitter.com/Brian Broderson. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian or subscribe to our podcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com.
So turn up your radio.
Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.